All right, so welcome back to Evil Thespian. We are here with comedic actress and performer Ruby McAllister. Ruby, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Oh my gosh. Thanks for having me. This is so fun.
Yay. This is a really cozy day to do this recording. It's like raining and like it's like gray and like rainy outside,
It's
but
also
I,
gray and rainy
yeah.
outside where I am too.
Yeah. I mean I pref honestly I prefer to do like morning recordings sometimes because I just feel like it always it's a zinger every time I do morning
Yeah,
recording.
I mean, honey, I love the mornings. That's,
So are you a morning person?
I am more or less. Recently, I've been, my sleep schedule has really been, wow, this is fascinating material up top. But my sleep schedule has been sort of screwed up this past month. So my mornings have been ostensibly robbed for me and
That's
crazy, but I do
frustrating.
love the mornings. I do love them.
Yeah. What is, I mean, in a perfect world, what time would you get up every day?
In a perfect world, I would wake up at like 7 for
Okay.
sure.
Yeah. I wake up at like 5 a.m., 5:30. I mean, in a perfect world, I would do that every day, but I would say like probably 50% of the time I wake up at like between 5 and 5:30.
Oh my God, what the hell are you doing before 7?
I'm a monster, so
Yeah.
you know.
Do you like
So
out like insanely or something?
you know, it actually I have not been working. I haven't really worked out. I don't think I've been to the gym in like a year, over a year. But I usually just like get up and walk my dog and just I don't know, use that time to just like fuck off and just like do nothing. Or
Wow,
I'll like read
beautiful.
a book, you know, do all those things where I'm just like just do whatever I want. Or
Wow.
maybe I'll clean, I don't know.
That's far out. I love that. That is so cool. I honor that.
yeah, so you're in New York.
I'm in New
Where
York
in New York?
City.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whereabouts?
I'm on the east side above 14th Street. And yeah, I guess like some people are very like controversial. I'm about to say something that's very controversial, more or less, but some old or New Yorkers that were like around in the famous 70s and 80s of New York call where I live the Upper East Village, which I love. I said this recently as a joke in a reading, and there's some like older people in there, and they thought I was like being really sort of like pop New York, like pop, like nouveau New York, and they were like appalled when they heard Upper East Village, which I think is like a
Weird.
funny joke, but they thought I was just being like disrespectful and shitty and annoying. Whereas,
Yeah.
like, if I told them who told me to say Upper East Village, they'd be shaking in their boots. But but more or less, I live in the Upper East Village of New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is really interesting to me because I mean, I go to New York like a couple times a year,
Yeah.
but I mean, I just literally, I'm so out of the loop with like what is the cool or like controversial or like what is the way or not the way to talk about New York. How would you like this? Because I'm coming in cold. So
Good, good.
how would you describe like the Upper East Village as opposed to, wait, is it
Yeah,
like, did I
yeah,
say
yeah,
it
yeah.
weird?
I mean, it's a joke. Where I live is like ostensibly Murray Hill or Gramercy Park, which means nothing to
Okay.
anybody, but
Yeah.
it's close enough to the East Village, but it's above 14th Street, right? So
Oh, okay. Okay.
it's a pun on Upper West Side or Upper East Side. So
Yes.
you go Upper East Village. But and there is, but like nobody, What's weird to me is that like there's new, what really like curdles the blood is like the chronic new real estate lingo for like new neighborhoods. They're like trying to like micro market and then out in really weird ways, or like at, if you have like a friend in marketing, they'll be like, oh, have you heard of, I mean, I can't even fucking come up with one of them because they're psychotic, but you know, like to hear these like micro chopped neighborhood lingo is,
yeah, that, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
because it's like people are trying to sort of I don't know, stake claim on like new verbiage
always for, right?
Yeah.
Because you can like you can sell things in a different way if you market it in a different way, right? But
wow,
blah blah how, blah,
how creative. Have you been in New York like your whole life, or are you, where were you born?
Okay, I was born in New York. Sorry, I'm also, you're actively hearing me getting sick. thank God for Zoom. Okay. hold on. Okay, I was born in New York. Does my voice still sound psychotic?
Oh no, it sounds really good. I get loud and clear.
Great. hold on. Oh my God, this is bad. Sorry, I'll have to be editing this episode. Okay.
You're fine.
I was born here. I was born in New York. Both of my parents, not to, we're really going to get into it on Evil Thespian. No. both of my parents met each other doing stage managing different shows and company managing different large tours. My father was the assistant director to Lee Brewer, who was the head of and the creative director of an experimental theater company called Mabu Minds that was started with Lee Brewer, Joanne Acolytis, Philip Glass, and Ruth Malachek. Those were the and so Mabu Minds was it's one of the grandfather companies of New York experimental theater of the 70s and 80s. And by the time my father graduated college and in the 80s, he was assisting directing with Lee Brewer and company managing large scale tours for that theater company. Then my mother, she was not like particularly beholden to one theater company, but she was a tour manager for, I think, the second or third tour of Einstein on the Beach with Robert Wilson and Philip Glass. She was also the company manager for George Foreman. She was the tour manager for Robert Wilson multiple times. This is how my parents made money. They were they were company managers. Okay.
Yeah.
So my mom was literally the tour manager of a Gamelies Thai shadow puppet show. Okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And my father,
I love puppets.
Well, you know those like Thai shadow puppets? Like my mom was the only woman in this tour, and she was the company manager, which, like, I don't know if you talk about this on this podcast, but company managers have an incredibly hard job. It's they have to make sure everybody's at the theater on time, that everyone's being paid, that everyone's going to their accommodations, that everyone's getting on the it's a psychotic job.
It's insane. I have one of my best friends you know, toured for a couple of years doing like children's puppetry, and the company required every actor to like drive the company cars as like their main source of like transportation. So like logistically it's hell.
Logistically it's hell. And the fact that both of my parents, like, this is how, and like you don't really get paid that much, especially in the 80s. Like, it wasn't like they were rolling in the cash, even though they were like associated with these like quite honestly, and I hate to do this, but like historical productions, like truly.
No, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so my parents met each other at a Shakespeare festival in Los Angeles. My father was touring with the Mabu Mines, you know, version of King Lear, which was based in the 1950s South.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ooh.
It's a great, and you can actually see this recorded production at the Lincoln Center Libraries in the, anyway, it's an amazing production.
I'll write that down.
I recommend it. And the next time you're in New York, yeah, you have to go to the Lincoln Center Libraries and see the live archive, because you know about this, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an amazing,
many things. Afternoon.
Yeah. It's, yes, like, it's free, whatever. Okay. But the, okay, I'm there all the time, but yes. Okay. The Mabu Mines King Lear production is at the Lincoln Center Libraries, and you should do it. And my dad briefly makes an appearance in the cast, even though he was the company manager. Okay. So they met at this Shakespeare festival. My father at the time had long red hair, really long red hair, like my length red hair. And my mother, like, you know, heard about him because they were both in sort of downtown New York theater circles. She went up to him and she was like, you know, I've always wanted a child with red hair, like being sexy or whatever.
Yeah.
They didn't like hook up or anything that night. They both were in respective relationships. My mother got hired to company manage and paper, which, if you don't know, do you know what papering the house means? They were,
no.
It's like when you, like in previews, where you basically, to paper the house, gives free tickets out,
mm-hmm,
to people to make the audience full, to get press in. It's mm-hmm, but it's like this, apparently this Broadway show, I forget which Broadway show it was, I was selling horribly. Mm-hmm. And my mother hired my father to help her paper the house and to do pre-production on this sort of like really not, it was a production, mm-hmm, that was not working, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my mom hired my dad because he was hot or whatever to, mm-hmm, her. Mm-hmm. And anyway, in 3 weeks,
smooth move.
Smooth, yeah. It's like, like wait for the long, like the long con works. Like this was a year, mm-hmm, and a half later, like don't get it twisted. Like the long con,
mm-hmm,
okay. He was living in Chicago at the time, actually,
mm-hmm,
with a hairdresser. Okay, whatever. Okay, my father and my mother work on this production. At the end of the pre-production, 3 weeks later, they get married in Baltimore. Okay.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Shut up.
They literally got married 3 weeks after basically hanging out with each other.
Yeah.
They successfully papered the show, and the show,
amazing,
that was sold really well. And they like were both my parents were celebrated at Tavern on the Green. Okay. Then I was born. And at that point, I was not a love child. I know that might be a controversial term. Is that sounds,
I don't
like,
know, to me,
doesn't that sound so outdated, love child?
Yes. And I actually was thinking about this the other day. I was like, first of all, because I was thinking, who uses the phrase, we made love, or like we make, I was like, does anyone use that phrase anymore? And then I was thinking, does anybody use the phrase love child anymore?
I know it's like a complete, it flew out of
very
my mouth
old
and
fashioned.
I was like, that sucks, like what
it's
is
very that? Yeah, I don't know,
but it's anyway, better than saying I wasn't a mistake. I think that's so,
yeah,
cool. It's like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
No one's a mistake.
There's some argument to that, but
yeah,
but
metaphysically yeah,
but what, okay, I'll say I was planned. I wasn't like, I didn't, mm-hmm, arrive on the scene is what I'm,
yeah,
trying,
yeah,
is what I'm trying, mm-hmm, to say. Okay.
Your parents, yeah, were rubbing their finger or hands together. I mean, like, you know, mm-hmm, planning.
They were planning. How do we get to me? Yeah. Anyway, but by the time I was born, they were company managing the first production of Blue Man Group. Okay.
Oh my God. I don't know why.
God
Okay.
is right.
This is really important. This is important to me as like a
It is.
Chicago person. Like
It is. I'm sure.
I've seen Blue Man Group probably 5 times in my life.
Me too. Me too.
I don't know what it is about that show or the Blue Man Institution, but it's a very magical, you know, world over there. I've seen Blue Man Group, like it's still here at the theater in Chicago where it's been for the last like 30 years.
Yeah.
Like
And
it's been there for so, like, I'm like, and everything around like the area like comes and goes and places go out of business and somehow.
The same. I don't know how they're keeping the franchise live on Astor Place, in the Astor Place Theater, where it was first done. That was the first theater I was ever taken to. When I was 3 weeks old, I was taken to the Astor Place Theater because my mom had to return to work. And, you know, it's still there. It's still running. I have no fucking idea how they did that. I don't
how?
Know.
How?
I have no fucking idea. But the, like, the joke is like, all my early baby pictures, I'm literally being, like, held by Blue Men. That is sort of
Wow.
the
That's
joke.
amazing. Yeah.
It is sort of amazing. Then what happens? I'm really like telling you the whole thespian thing. I'm just
I love it. I love it.
It's
it's
the thing. Okay.
It's important. Yeah, it's the perfect place for this.
It's the whole thing. It's just like, it's like, it's evil thespian. I was listening to a few episodes. I'm just like,
gotta
it's
do it.
Annoying that I'm doing this, but it is
Oh,
the
no,
truth.
it's not.
Okay. It is the full truth of my life. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
My life. Okay.
You have to speak your truth.
I have to. And I'm like, this is the truth. My
Sorry,
parents were in
like,
theater. Okay.
Yeah.
So my dad got like a little freaked out after I was born. As
common.
It's common.
Totally normal.
Totally normally got freaked out. And I think he was offered a technically higher position to run. General manage, okay, to general manage a full theater. So that was to be in charge of all the productions in and out, also to produce some of the productions and to be in charge of the theater rather than a production, right? So but this theater, this is the caveat, was on La Cienega Boulevard between Beverly Boulevard and Melrose Avenue. In Los Angeles, California. Okay. Sounds like a good gig.
What's the catch?
Except the catch is the fact that it's in LA. The catch is the fact that nobody, especially them, okay, nobody goes to theater in Los Angeles. Nobody. Especially in the mid-90s and early 2000s, there's no theater culture in LA. Okay, it's live performance now is getting cooler in LA actually because, and I'll tell you why, because of Uber, because of
it's
Lyft.
True,
because
it
you can go
is.
Out and get drunk and go home.
Yeah. It like completely transformed the like theater into like live performance
it has.
Economy
it
completely.
has literally has, and especially in LA, because before Uber and Lyft, you had to dial a number, get a cab, and they're $100. It's not like hailing it. There's no hailing a taxi. There's nothing. That it was Wild West vibes. Okay.
Yeah.
So this theater is called the Cornet Theater. It's still around. In fact, ironically, it's now a comedy club. It's now the Largo Comedy Club. It sells out. It's a very beloved theater, thank God. Because also, fun fact, Los Angeles has the most 99 seat theaters per square mile than anywhere in the world.
What? I wonder if that's like a zoning thing
It's
or
not. The
it's
thing
just,
is
it's
that
not.
it's not. The thing is, with Los Angeles, the zoning laws are so not strict. The
Yeah.
historical preservation laws are so not strict. That you can do sort of like whatever you want. There's no,
That's
so
awesome.
there's no, more or less, but that's, there's also this whole other thing where it's like so many theater, more theaters in Los Angeles have been destroyed than in any other place in the world because of that fact. Los Angeles is brutal historically. There's endless text on this about the historical preservation of the buildings of Los Angeles, which is complicated because LA also has an incredibly, I would say, diverse architectural climate. Historically, the weirdest architecture is in LA. It's body, it's camp, it's random, it's bad,
Yeah,
it's weird.
I recently just went to California for the very first time in my life
Okay.
last year, and I didn't go to Los Angeles. I've never been there before, but I will one day. But I went to Palm Springs, and I felt like
Oh, I love Palm Springs.
it was incredible, and I felt like I was on a completely different planet. Like I was like, is this, I can't believe this is America. Like
I know, it's
I was like,
amazing.
I love
It's super far out.
America.
I know, it's
You
really far
know?
out. It's really far out.
Yeah.
And like, anyway, so I could
Yeah.
talk about this for the rest of my life. This is a huge part of like my political
No. Well,
life. But it's anyway,
it's
so it's
also
a
really
miracle. It's a,
important. You
yeah.
know, it's like historic, like the history, like my husband and I are like huge history, like people, like history buffs. So whenever
Too, yeah.
like some like you know, new something new, like new ideas, new like themes in like the art world or theater world, it's like we're always like kind of those people who are like, well, actually, like kind of annoying, but it's like, well, actually, according to the history, if you look back in on the history of theater, you know,
No,
kind of
I know,
stuff
I
like that.
know.
Because it's like preservation, like historical, like arts and cultural preservation is so important.
I mean, yeah, and I mean, I guess like for me, this is the Cornette Theater is my home. You know, I grew up in this theater. I was there basically every day of my life from the ages of 2 to 14. I ran the box office. I was there all the time. This was my home. And not only that, this is the basis of who I am, this theater is. It's not, my entire inner life was
It's like
developed in the
your
theater.
house.
It is. It is. The
Yeah.
fact that it still stands and that people enjoy this theater. Not only that, I've performed at the Cornette as a comedian. Like,
Yeah.
that's like a deeply moving thing, especially in
Yeah.
a place like Los Angeles that really sort of like tears things down all the time. Like there's no integrity to so
Yeah.
many buildings in Los Angeles, whereas in New York, this is what I mean. This is why I'm like, this is my politics, because it's like these
Yeah.
are people's homes. Theaters are people's homes. Theaters house
Yes.
souls. Theaters house, it's a really big deal when they're down. And
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's a couple of theaters, like really, really old theaters in Milwaukee
oh my
that
God, Milwaukee.
are so beautiful, and some of them were like bought out or in the early 2000s. And what's really creepy, because like so many, it's just like was home to so many people. They're just like boarded up, and they're just like sitting there, and they're absolutely haunted. And it's just like really creepy and really sad, because these facilities are like hundreds of years old, and they have the most incredible infrastructure, like the whole like fly system and like the
Yeah,
seats and
yeah,
the
yeah.
carpets,
Oh my God,
all
yeah.
that stuff. Yeah,
Oh my God,
but
I know. I mean, oh my God, I love Milwaukee. But yeah, like I totally agree. So in New York, in comparison, theaters can be boarded up for sure, but to tear down a theater in New York is very hard. There's a lot of laws against it. So if there are some theaters, like, fun fact, I'm like, you like, little did you know that you like basically it's like my trivia of this shit is embarrassing. I am literally so sorry. I hope anyone.
No, it's not embarrassing at all.
I'm so sorry.
This is what I'm here for.
Okay. So on 42nd Street, the original Ziegfeld Theater of Ziegfeld Follies, which was like the first ostensible show of America, and gave birth to mainstream vaudeville as we know it. Mainstream rather than, I mean, that's a whole other story where it's like Yiddish theater versus Broadway vaudeville. Okay, anyway, Fanny Brice started in the Ziegfeld Follies, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. The Ziegfeld Theater, which was a spectacular, spectacular, spectacular theater. And it was built by Florence Ziegfeld to his dimensions. They had stages that could, if you lifted the boards, you could have it, the stage extend, and it be glass. So people could sit underneath the dancing girls. Like, this theater
that's amazing.
Yeah, this theater was psychotic, and it was the early 1900s it was built. Like, it's crazy.
Oh yeah.
So it then was abandoned, I believe, in the 50s or 60s, and it was like totally abandoned. It was a ghost theater because also at the time New York was bankrupt. Times Square was fucking seedy and like whatever.
Guns a-blazing.
Exactly. Like, so, and that also, the empty Ziegfeld Theater is what gave Sondheim to write Follies. That's what they're, right? It's called Follies, right?
Yeah.
So that's what that's about. It's about the abandoned Ziegfeld Theater. So when this was bought in the late 80s, it was bought by McDonald's. Okay. And it is a McDonald's now. Wow. And, but the thing is that it looks like a theater on the outside. And there are these weird, if you go inside of this McDonald's on 42nd Street, there are these weird homages that by law they had to incorporate to let people know that this was this theater.
Yeah.
There's a ton of different, there's also, like, I live near a movie theater called the Village East, the movie theater. But if you go into the main auditorium, it's this huge proscenium, and you notice that there's a bunch of Star of Davids on the ceiling.
Yeah.
That's because it was the biggest Yiddish theater at the turn of the century, and they can't renovate it. They literally can't destroy it. They have to preserve the fact that this theater was a Yiddish theater. It's now a movie theater, but it's anyway. So in
there's a couple. I mean, it's definitely not in the same way in Chicago, but there are a couple of, like, music venues in Chicago that were, like, previously old theaters, but they still have, like, all of, like, the trim and, like, the proscenium and everything. And stuff like that, whether they have, like, dragons or whatever. But
like, but anyway, that's not the law in LA. So
yeah.
Theaters just get torn down. There's no like homage to them. And anyway, so it's a big deal. Long story short, it's a big deal that the theater I grew up in is still standing to me.
Yes.
Okay. And but this theater, you know, and this is what my show that I just wrapped in New York Tragedy was about, that I'm taking to Chechia or the former Czech Republic this week, which is
okay, let's, but, we have to get into that.
yeah, but so I basically in my show Tragedy, which is my first one woman solo show that I did, and I took to Edinburgh this past whatever summer. And basically what that is about is the fact that I was raised in this theater and I saw some like pretty bleak, weird stuff. Because it like wasn't, again, as I explained, like LA wasn't the theater culture of New York. So it's a lot of like vanity projects of like washed up soap opera stars, and it was people, struggling actors, on their last go before they would either go home or they would kill themselves. It was like,
It was a tragedy.
I was like surrounded by it. I have no idea why I then decided, like, I'll be an actor and I'll be a live performer.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I guess it's like, on a psychoanalytic level, it's like I have to like correct the repetition, or like,
yeah, to break the generational cycle
or something. I have no idea. I have no idea. I like wake up every day and I'm like, what the fuck? But But that's, and, you know, and the theater, the Cornet Theater also is haunted. Every theater is haunted, as you mentioned.
Yeah, for sure. Have you had any ghost experiences with ghosts, in any significant formative ghost experiences?
And speaking of ghosts, if I am in a situation where I have to be privy to theater ghosts and spirits, I really need to be in a place where I'm not overly caffeinated. So lately I've been drinking this little matcha drink in the morning from this company called Magic Mind. They make the best little matcha drink that gives you a lovely green tea caffeine feeling. It also has all of your essential B vitamins with a little bit of ashwagandha for a nice relaxing focus. I've been drinking it in the morning and it just keeps me focused, gives me the vitamin fix I need. And it also makes me feel like I'm on a little cloud of green tea tranquility. You can go to magicmind.com/evil tea. That's E-V-I-L, T as in Tom. And with the code EvilT20, that's E-V-I-L, T as in Tom, 20, you also get up to 56% off of your first subscription or 20% off your one-time purchase. Honestly, I really do highly recommend it. It's also worth mentioning that Magic Mind is a huge supporter of the Thespians. So we love that and 100% stand by. So go to magicmind.com/evil tea. Use the code EvilT20 and shout out to Magic Mind, period.
Yeah. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. So many I was like an amateur ghost hunter as a kid, like literally.
Same.
like with Polaroid cameras and like weird meter detectors and stuff. I had amazing weird experiences, like a lot of weird noises, and I believe that, you know, I saw the ghost of the actor that haunts the Cornet Theater, which is Charles Lawton is the ghost of the Cornet Theater. And Charles Lawton was a Shakespearean actor that became a film actor. He's in tons of movies. He's in Witnesses to the Prosecution. He's in that's my favorite one. What else is he in? I don't fucking know. He's in a ton of shit. But he also, my favorite thing he did is he directed the movie Night of the Hunter. And it was the only movie he ever directed, with starring Shelley Winters, who's like my literally favorite actress. But anyway, he haunted the fucking theater. I think I saw his ghost a bunch of times. I was like obsessed with him and his story. He would always like turn on and off the lights in the attic, shit like that. And then like LA is like truly just the most haunted place on the planet. I mean, I don't even I don't feel as many ghosts in New York at all. At all. I don't know why that is. But yeah, LA is
still- Yeah, I don't it's interesting. There's a theater in Milwaukee called the Majeska Theater, and I'm pretty sure it's like it definitely is like boarded up, or honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like completely torn down right now. But I used to do theater there, and I guess a long time, like when the theater was like in its heydays in like the early 1900s, there was this guy who worked there who like hung himself over the balcony, and we would just see this ghost on the balcony almost like regularly. It would just be like, I don't know, it's like hard, so hard to explain, but basically anyone who like did theater there would just there would just be like this silhouette that would like come and go every once in a blue moon. And then of course, like certain things happen, like someone calls your name and then it's like, oh, my, and then nobody's there. And like, did you just call me? You know, little things like that.
Wow. Where
it's really, it was a very like beautiful, gorgeous place, but it was also just a very spooky place. And also I think there's an element to some of these buildings where, honestly, it probably was just that building, because like there were some things about the building that were not like up to code. So there's an element of danger, you know.
Definitely. I mean, I think I don't know. I think theaters are such special places. I really do. I don't know.
It's like where so many people's really dreams bizarre. Came true. Like,
yeah, you know? Or it's like where we're like actively physically like there's something like a conscious, I don't know, it's like deeply magical. I don't know, it's sounds so corny and trite, and but there's really like
no, it's no like other your way spirit to talk about. Yeah, no, like your spirit, like I feel like anytime I've like acted anywhere, it's like my spirit is like enmeshed, or it's like there's some kind of spiritual handprint on certain places that I've like done theater. My theater like that was at my college, that was like super old and had been there since like the 60s. It was recently torn down, and it was just like the weirdest feeling to like watch these pictures of like my theater department and the theater that was there be completely demolished, because they're building a new school for theater, and it's going to be like they're gonna build two new theaters there, and which is great. But I'm just like, wow, it just feels so creepy, and it weirdly feels like very violating to like watch a big, gigantic like construction site like go. I'm just like, that's nobody asked me.
No, I know.
It's you know,
so intense.
It's weird.
And also, yeah, I mean, these places are like churches. They're like temples.
Yeah.
Like, my God, I'm sounding so corny, but you know what? Everyone, it's.
I've had so many
to this like, if they weren't down to hear this shit anyway.
Well, I have like one like really like core memory that I felt like is like the memory that has been like locked inside my body for, and will be for the rest of my life. But like I have like that this like one like church memory when I was playing Irma at in my theater department's production of Anything Goes, and I'm like not really I can sing ostensibly, but I wouldn't describe myself as a singer, you know. We were rehearsing one day and it was like going along like fine, and I just thought there was one rehearsal where it just like went amazing, and my professor like called me off the stage and like to talk to me, and I was like, oh my God, I did horrible, or he's gonna say something. And he like looked me in the eyes and he was like, I wanted this for you so bad. And then I like left rehearsal that night like crying, because it was just like so powerful, because I was just like really struggling with like singing. And I was like, there were some days where it's like, oh my God, like Maddie, she can't fucking sing or whatever. And then like, one day I really did, and like my professor was like, I've always wanted this for you.
Wow.
Oh my God. Anyways, that's beautiful. I think about that. Yeah. But But
wow, what it wow.
And then and now that space is gone. So,
my God. So oh my God.
It's locked inside me, you know.
Oh no, no. I could also really talk about how like I do believe like live performance is like a real spiritual act or whatever, but I've never had a experience mm-hmm. necessarily like that, but I have. Yeah, I mean, to really like surrender to the fact that it's live, or you know, you go on stage mm-hmm. and like against all odds, things sort of come out of you, and
mm-hmm.
yeah,
yeah, I like out. The like I love this like concept that is like so almost it feels like because in real life it feels impossible to feel like against all odds I rose from the ashes and defied the haters and whatever, like I feel like that rarely happens in like real life, but I always feel that feeling when I'm like performing, because it's just like that's just like a time where it's like against all odds I'm just here and in the present and in the moment, and that's like such a like an accomplishment. Like I just this year I got laid off from a job and I have been struggling trying to find employment since getting laid off in April, and like this whole year I'm like have this fantasy of like I'm going to defy the haters, and in a couple months I'm going to get a new day job and I'm rising from the ashes, and it just never happened this whole year. Wow. And I was thinking like, wow, like that, but it made me think about like acting and performing, because like those are the times where like you really have the most agency to like really control, you know.
It's true. I mean, I think for me, I'm like, I don't know, I'm like a little more passive, I think, in general. I am competitive, but in like a really sort of maybe like uglier way, but
that's good though.
Maybe no, but I mean like really, I really do think for me at least live performance is like a moment where you sort of are just like you're not taking the wheel really.
Yeah,
it's mm-hmm. something much more powerful yes. than you is.
Yeah.
And
I love it when things go wrong or things go like weirdly right, and like you're like, how did that even happen?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the best.
It is. But I do think, yeah. Anyway, I've this could easily become like a theological discussion, but I don't know if you want it to be that. But yeah, I guess.
But so you're going to you just closed Tragedy, or you haven't closed it, at least here.
I had been developing the show for like 2 years. And well, not really, like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And I'd been workshopping it a ton. I workshopped it a ton here and in LA. And then I took it to Edinburgh. And then I wanted to show it for a final time in New York. I did that last Thursday. And now I'm going to, this like arts festival outside of Prague. Which is crazy because my show is like fully about Los Angeles. So I have no idea how that's going to play in a not America, but also like not an English speaking country. But because it was so difficult to even perform it in Scotland, was so difficult. So
Scottish people speak like a whole different like language, I feel like
they do, you know? It was more just like audiences internationally are just so different, they respond very differently. Americans are really loud. Americans like scream and clap. British people don't, Scottish people really don't.
That's interesting.
You know, like the way that you don't know if it, like the way you know you're doing a good job is in a very different metric than in America. LA responds to in a different way than New York. Chicago audiences are like actually the most generous, I think, in America, quite honestly. But yeah, everyone responds differently culturally. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how like Czech people are like, I literally don't know. I could be performing for a fucking hour without a peep or a squeep.
Like
they could be as silent as the night. They could, you know, like, I don't.
I mean, I'm such a hick. Like I'm thinking like, wait, what language do they speak in Prague? Like,
I think they speak Czech, right?
Oh, that makes sense.
I think they speak Czech. Let me see.
Like completely.
Because they also changed the country's name to Chechia.
So.
Yeah. It's it's crazy, but
so how has like your one woman show like evolved over this, you know, timeline of like workshopping it, showing it to different audiences? Like, where are you kind of now with it versus maybe kind of when it was still workshopping?
They speak Czech, by the way. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Makes sense.
Like, I've never done this before. So I basically tried to like use parts from when I would perform stand up and start there, because I do perform stand up. But it's a little bit like weird. Like alternative stand-up, but it's not that weird, whatever. Okay, anyway, it started as like bits that I wove together, and then like I knew I wanted to talk about certain things, and on stage, because I don't usually write like sitting down typing, I write live, I write on stage. So I basically would like deadline myself, I'll be putting up these shows, and I really wouldn't know what I was doing, and I would figure it out as I went, basically live in front of like 60 to 100 people, which is sort of crazy. But then eventually I got my friend Casey Jane Ellison, who's also like a genius comic. She offered to direct the show last January, and like with her, she's also a genius writer as well, we sort of structured the show finally, and it was brutal, and it was I was like so difficult to work with, and I was like
why, how so?
Because I didn't want, I just have so much resistance around it was my life. It's like, it's so much, it's my life story. So I had so
it's
much.
It's like gentle, like,
it's like, it is fragile, I guess, but it's also like annoying. I would just get so angry at myself. It's like, why did I fucking pick this stupid fucking topic to fucking talk about? Like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like being like, I don't want to talk about my childhood. I don't want to talk about, you know, like, shut the fuck up. Like, I would just get so angry, and I'd be like, then these other stories would like fly out of me, and Casey would be like, wait, aren't we incorporating that? That's great. Like, so she was like this amazing person that would structured everything so intensely and caught things that I would otherwise be like, I can't fucking talk about that. That's fucking crazy. I can't fucking talk about that, because you know, I go from the show goes from like my childhood growing up in a theater to my obsession with ghosts, to how this obsession with ghosts became an obsession with tragic women, and how I attempted to model my life off of these tragic icons, and I would constantly
very relatable.
Yes, I'm glad that you feel that way, because I think it's incredibly relatable too.
Just because, like, especially as an actor, where you feel like every day of your life, you feel like I'm just downtrodden by the world, and I'm like, yeah. Nobody likes me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like, mm-hmm. I just became obsessed with these women that had like lived so hard or lived in these really weird ways and maybe died at an earlier age. But like,
well, yeah, I especially think about like, okay, if I was me, but in like, I don't know, 1918, like,
yeah,
I would probably be dead by now. Like, just with all of like the, you know, drugs and alcohol and like different substances that were barbiturates, you know, probably would. Yeah. So I'm very grateful to the tragic women that came before me.
Me too. And like, I really tried to like feel their pain. I like tried to be a drug addict. I tried to do so many stupid things, and then I would always like, none of the habits would stick,
mm-hmm.
which is a huge part of the show. Like, I would like do stuff and then get caught, or do stuff and then it just wouldn't,
mm-hmm.
just didn't vibe. And there was always something much larger than myself, like sort of, again, putting, like, I don't know, there's just something stopping me all the time from just like, mm-hmm. burning my life down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show ends with this story of, and I was involved in a legal situation when I was in college that I almost got incarcerated for. So there was like a huge, that's the climax of the show. And I can talk about this on the podcast, because who knows when I'll perform it again, but suddenly I was like faced with the possibility of like possibly being a tragic, successfully mm-hmm. being a tragic woman, mm-hmm. and so that is that
show. I mean, this will be interesting for the good people of Prague that speak Czech.
Yes, yes.
For them, when you perform it, for different audiences, have you received like, what's that, like a point of like feedback or audience response that like you have never expected from the show? Or I know, I mean, usually like a lot of things surprise us in theater. So,
This last time, you know, this last performance I did, people were like texting me. It was an amazing performance. And I'm so grateful for everyone who came, because it was so moving. And like, it was just like an amazing time. But that's people awesome. Would DM me like lines that they remembered, and my friend Andrea like was like, oh my god, I started crying on the line. It's like one of the last lines of the show where I'm like in this legal situation, and the mm-hmm. line is like, and then you realize nobody cares that you're from Los Angeles, nobody cares that you can talk to ghosts and your dad ran a theater. You know, mm-hmm. To be a tragic woman is not to be treated like you're fabulous, but to be treated like an actual criminal. And mm-hmm. like, she pulled out the line, like, I cried on nobody cared that I was from LA. And I was like, that's such a glib line. You know what I mean? Like, that's such a joke. But like, it's
because it's true, or you know, like it's
all have those the truth in about it. Ourselves, right? That we're like, oh, this is the thing about me that's so fucking cool, you know. This is the thing that sets me apart. And like, for me, it's the fact that I'm fucking from LA. Who cares? You know, literally, who cares?
Yeah.
But we all have that little thing, especially artists, especially actors. We have that one fun fact. We have that one gem in our hearts that is like, this is what makes my perspective unique and essential, you know? And and then when you're faced with larger systemic issues, when you're like in a system,
that is true.
Like, not to be, I was like, I'm literally like a white girl talking about this, but like,
oh my gosh, no, this is very, this is really relatable.
Yes. And it's like, even if you're just like in an educational system, you often also just get like, you just become like a number. There's so many systems that your uniqueness has no, paying your taxes, nobody can, right? It's like, even I was in a legal situation, I was possibly going to go to jail, but it's the same thing that I experience every year when I do my taxes. I'm like, nobody cares that I'm a good person and I did all this stuff that nobody cares, you know, like, and it's like, yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah. That's like, so I really, really relate to that really heavily, because this year specifically in my life was like a huge, tragic woman, a suffering year for me, because similarly, I also almost got wrapped up in a legal situation.
Interesting.
Where I, it's like, I don't think I, basically,
you also don't have to talk about it. Like, you can be as vague as.
It's totally fine. But I mean, I allegedly was retaliated against at my former workplace. And, you know, I'm very vocal about these things, some things that I think, especially if somebody's like, oh, we really give me your feedback. Like, we love your feedback. Like, we really value you as a worker. So I'm like, okay, here's my feedback. And then I give the feedback they don't want to hear. And then it turns into a whole situation. And then I have to decide if I want to do anything like legally. And like, this whole year was kind of just like, and then, you know, I was like, oh, this, you know, employer like really, really like had a, or, you know, gave me the impression that I was special, you know, like, like, you are special as a worker. You're like so brilliant, smart, unique, all of these things. So I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I trust you. Here's some feedback. And then they never talked to me again. And I was completely isolated and like alone. And then I had to, then I, you know, had a very, and then there was like kind of an anxiety element about it, where it's like, I'm like fair, I'm like looking over my shoulder because I'm so paranoid because I think somebody's going to come and get me. But there's also an element of like, you know, emotionally that happens, but I think also something like that's helped me come down from that intellectually is like to remind myself, like, nobody's thinking about you. You're like not, it's just an, there are a million shitty businesses out there that do that. And there are a million me's out there that have like the same experience. But in the same breath, I also kind of felt kind of like glamorous, because I was like, oh shit, like, now I'm a married woman with no job, which is already amazing. And I might be enraptured in a lawsuit. So, yeah, but it's like the tragic, like, woman archetype. I feel like isolation is just a huge theme that, like, runs.
You're really beautiful way to put it. Totally. Like, I really just, I really thought my destiny was, and I say this all the time, I've said this this year, especially because I was like working on this project so much, like, I really just wanted, I thought my destiny was like pure isolation and like, like, truly, and like, God literally was like, joke's on you, bitch. Like, you're not only that, you're gonna like build communities, you're gonna have like, I'm so entrenched in other people's lives. I'm like, so the opposite of isolated, to the point at which it's like a joke. Like, I literally thought, like, when I was 12, that I'd be like, oh, by the time, you know, when you're in your 20s, like, you're going to be living alone and nobody's going to want to talk to you except for the man that you're having sex with that month.
I know.
You know, and it's like, that's not.
It's so true. It's like,
No, I actually have the ability to have friendships and participate in communities and
Yeah, be like, socialized.
I literally, it's a bizarre, and this is a larger theory entirely that I'm also, I don't know, but it's like, I think in some way, like these tragic icons, like I talk about, like Edie Sedgwick, I talk about Karen Carpenter, I talk about this actress, Barbara Payton, that is a very unknown actress that was an MGM contract star, and her contract was liquidated because she was in a legal situation. Mm-hmm. And I obviously talk about Marilyn Monroe, but like the other ones are like, for me, like Judy Garland, such a huge mm-hmm. one for me, but Judy is huge. Like, I can't even talk about her. Like that would be a show. But, you know, these women sort of lived, you know, for me, like when my life got really chaotic, these women were like touchstones of survival, or like mm-hmm. that, you know, shitty things happen, or, but mm-hmm. you can still sort of like go on some level. Mm-hmm. And they did, in a way, like live alternative lifestyles, like they mm-hmm. did. And I do think, like, for like a girl like myself who, like, you know, grew up, like, has a penchant for the dramatic, like
mm-hmm.
I already always felt in some way different. So I was like, mm-hmm. oh, well, my only option is fucking a tragic life. Like when mm-hmm. I was in middle school, I was like, you know that there's like those like superlatives in your yearbook. Then there was like there was like fake ones that people like didn't publish, but like,
yeah.
And like, I was voted the most likely to become a drug addict. Even though I'd like never smoked pot or anything, like I wasn't doing drugs. I was like 12.
Okay.
The next year I started doing a lot of drugs because, and it's like, I want.
Wait, when you were 12 years old?
I did start doing drugs when I was 12, but
Wow.
But I also, like, when I was like voted most likely to become a drug addict, I was not. And I was like, why do people read this off of me? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, because I'm like exuberant and
mm-hmm.
dressed differently. And like, mm-hmm. So there was this, like, it was almost as if, I don't know what show, it's like, I was raised in a theater in this weird way. Maybe mm-hmm. that's why, I don't know. But there's, mm-hmm. it seemed like for such a long time, until, you know, somewhat recently, that it was like my only option.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you're right. I think women also, I don't know, I think there's such a culture of isolation for women. And like, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm literally
it's just like a weird fact of like, even like global society.
No matter
where you're from, it's like, I mean, isolation is a huge theme, you know, for like anyone, but I feel like for women specifically, like on a global scale, there is like just a collective consciousness about like knowing that if you're a woman, and you just like kind of occupy this mental space and like the collective consciousness of like being like, oh, we're the isolated people.
100%.
So
yeah, I think like, yeah, that is really so mm-hmm. much of what the show was about, is about. And I think it's an incredibly relatable show, but
yeah.
Well, I'm sure some girl in the Czech Republic will think so too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right? So are you going there by yourself, or?
I am going there by myself. I have a few friends in the festival, so I'm not going to be like alone at the festival, but, mm-hmm. and there's some Americans, but, it's like a crazy, who knows, man.
I recently just went to Paris for the first time last year.
Okay.
And I had never gone before, but I was like really, really impressed with how cool everybody was. Well, mostly because everybody wasn't like super, it was just like nice not to be in some place where not everyone's very loud. You
Oh,
know?
interesting.
And but also what I really liked about French people, like if my husband and I were like at a museum or at like some art institution and you would like walk in front of somebody or like block someone's view, you would just hear someone go like like they're constantly like making like noises, like if you walk too slow, like oh my God.
I
It's
know.
amazing to me.
I love that. I love
Yeah,
that.
but yeah, but that's, I mean, that's awesome that like you're able to like kind of showcase like these stories like to different audiences, because it's always like very interesting to kind of see like how different people react to different things.
Yeah, oh my God, it's crazy. It's like it's
Yeah.
never Yeah, it's you can never
Yeah.
really anticipate it. It's really weird.
No.
Yeah.
Well, what are you, so you've got, you're doing this show, and
Yeah.
then do you have anything else you're working on right now?
I am. I'm working on a new show that like the beginning of it will be presented in February at Joe's Pub in New York. And then I'm gonna go to LA and also workshop it in March. And yeah, and I'm always like I have like, yeah, the projects are insane. I also just launched a perfume 2.5 weeks ago.
Oh,
Also
so I saw that. Yeah, it's tragedy, right?
it's called Tragedy. It's a
Period.
oil.
Period.
It's an ode to all the tragic girls. I'll show you the box.
Okay, yes, I'm gonna cop,
Yeah.
definitely.
It's $55, so it's not like for perfume that's like fucking literally nothing. So it's like this is the
Oh, that's
it's a
beautiful.
perfume oil with my face on it, and then on the side of the box
Wow.
in Latin and then also in English it says Providence for the Tragic Girls.
Oh my God, I love that.
And then I'll show you this too. This is the bottle, and this is like my little magical spell on the label of the perfume. Has the emblem of the Cornette Theater on it, like right here.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
so precious. Oh my gosh,
Yeah,
that's
so this
beautiful.
will this the Cornette Theater's emblem is being sent throughout
Perfect.
the
Yeah.
country, and the
What are
world.
the what are like the top notes or
Oh yeah, great question. So the notes of Tragedy are tuberose, so that's sort of a rich floral scent. Like it's sort of like a sexy, fleshy floral scent. And then like rose, it is in the rose family. And
Awesome.
then so that's sort of like the opening note. And it sort of dries down to this sort of what I like to call a high-pitched shriek, but
Oh,
nobody
I love
it dries
that.
down to this sort of high-pitched shriek of balsam fir. So that's a pine scent. So there's almost like a Christmas pine. So it's like floral and pine, and then it dries down to this like musky oak moss. So it's
I
like
love
this
that.
moss. So it's like haunted glamour,
Yes.
our lady.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to get I'm definitely going to purchase Tragedy for sure.
Oh my
But
God.
I was
Yeah,
I
please. I would and put in the notes and I'll throw in some other things too.
yes. I that really, but it does remind me, there was this perfume that I wore for like a couple years called Chypre Mousse. It's like a green chypre, and it's like rooted in like this cypress scent, and I forget why I was wearing it, but it's kind of like any kind of like mossy, really old I feel like these scents, like people are, it smells old, but it's like, to me, I'm like, it's just sheepra mousse. Like it's like a fluffy, pillowy, mossy. So anything with like green sheepra in it, so good. But it is kind of like that oaky, mossy. Yeah, so good.
Wow. Yeah. No. This is like semi-based on a fragrance that I wear a lot called Fracas, which is a Robert Piguet scent that's also tuberose based. And like lots of actresses historically have worn that scent. But this doesn't smell, it does smell like body, like it's like a bigger scent, but it's like, it has sort of a fresh quality to it.
Yeah. So
not like so old school smelling necessarily, but you can purchase it on marissazappas.com. A tragedy period. Oil. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yes, yes, yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
And then where else can we find you? IG.
Yeah. Oh my God. My like my Instagram is ruby.mcallister. It's my name. You can find me there. I'm like, I have like such a hidden TikTok presence, and like I hardly do other social media endeavors, but IG, you can find me there, follow me there. I'm always doing something psychotic.
And to our Chechen listeners, you can catch her.
Yes.
I don't know if I
this
have
Friday.
This Friday, okay.
This Friday.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, thank you, Ruby, so much for coming on the show.
This is so fun.
Oh, it was so lovely. Hopefully I'll be in the New York area sometime early next year. So hopefully I'll run into you. But
please tell me.
Will do. All right. Well, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day and scene.
Thank you.
Okay.